Welcome to the podcast Potenzialgestalter Dialog. Look forward to an inspiring session. My name is Jürgen Ruf. Welcome to today's podcast. This time we are going on a, for me, far away area, which is Canada in British Columbia, the border to Alaska. And I'm really glad to have Mike Butling in the house. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Jürgen. How are you?
Fine, and you?
Excellent. Yes, very good. Crisp and cold outside today.
Oh, cool. I remember the January time where I had the unique opportunity to be in one of your two areas and where we met. But you missed that Arctic outflow, that really cold is, or lucky to you.
That was a cold week for sure. Yes, I think the coldest temperatures got down to about minus 32. So it's not the coldest we've had, but it's certainly pretty chilly. Doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you need the right clothing, that's for sure.
Yeah, skiing with minus 29 during the day and wind with 40 kilometers was a challenge, but not so for the buggy. So for me, clothing were easy with the new stuff. It was for the feet dangerous and for the helmet.
Yes, you definitely have to watch out for the toes and the fingers on those days.
Yep.
Thank goodness for our technology of the heated boots. That's a good thing.
Oh yeah, that was the first time I used my heated socks, although the battery is running out after 3 hours because they need more energy. It was a surprise.
Yes.
You founded with some partners in 1996, Last Frontier Hailing Skiing in Canada, British Columbia. And you have two lovely places there. One is Ripley Creek, which is a old mining village called Stewart in the nowhere, I could say. It's a wonderful place. Still the design of, as it had been, 1700 in the gold mining phase. It's unbelievable nice. It's an absolute adventure to be there and a lovely place for skiing. And you have another one called Bell Tool Lodge, which is a more, I think, stylish, luxury area. What happened in that area that you founded it? Was it luck that you found that place, or how you got in such a hidden secret to find it?
Maybe we'll get onto that later, but I'm not necessarily sure I believe in too much luck. I think it could be fortune, and that we have a hand creating. But so I was working for a company down in the southern part of British Columbia near Whistler called Tyack's Lodge Heli Skiing, or it was called Tyack's Lodge Heli Skiing. And the boss man there, a Swiss fellow called George Rosset or Jörg, he was talking about starting up another operation up in the north, and he asked me if I wanted to join him on that project. So that was, I suppose, the first opportunity that was presented to me was to work at Tyack's, and the second opportunity that was presented to me was to become involved in Last Frontier. And I took that opportunity, and I suppose over the years since, further opportunities have presented themselves, and I've taken those as well. So, it's been a road of opportunities, and you either you take them or you don't take them, and that's how you end up where you are.
But you have to say you are now managing partner, so you own some part of it. And if I imagine what it needs to cost, you have the lodges, the houses, restaurants, you have a lot of stuff needed for it. You have the flight operations. It's not just that you have it in your pocket, that money, huh?
No, it's been a gentle progress. I mean, all the people who have been involved in the business as far as owners are concerned over the years, I mean, no one has come to the table with exceptionally deep pockets. We've grown the business from nothing, organically, and been able to, or have chosen to, you know, when there are profits, we've chosen to reinvest those profits in the business and grow. We've also now decided that, we've decided that there's a point where we don't actually want to grow anymore in size or capacity. We just want to grow the business in quality, and I suppose from a human side, on a people side.
And I can really confirm that you do on a high professional way. I had the luck to be there and to experience how the team spirit is.
It wasn't luck, Jürgen. It was fortune. The opportunity presented itself and you took it. Not luck.
I know the university offered that opportunity in December 2022, and I picked it. And I don't regret it because it was really a unique experience with everything what happened, as well with the qualities. It was awesome. And seeing the spirit of your team, the quality of cooking, unbelievable. But as well, you know, the reason you had been there is the nature. And the nature is impossible to describe. I know. Yes. You might get used to it because you are there every day.
Oh, I mean, I think that's true to some degree. But I mean, I certainly appreciate the nature and the location and the feeling of wilderness. I think being in a remote place surrounded by a wilderness is a powerful experience. Yeah, if you are not regularly in wilderness and the majority of your time is, you know, in a city or a town or around a lot of people, then the effect that being in true wilderness has on you to help you through the city experience is sometimes quite profound. When I come back to the city or visit the city after having been in the north, it's quite overwhelming.
That's why I live in the countryside and not on a huge city. But I experience it coming into the big airports. You already see that hectic, that pressure, the people are running around, driving their cars through the parking lot, and you say, hang on, slow down.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like cities, but I think at some point in, I found for me that at some point in my life, I found there was going to be a necessity to decide whether I was going to live in a city and visit the countryside or whether I was going to live in the countryside and visit the city. Because if you try and do it in between, then you get neither. So I decided to go for, I suppose, an extreme version and live in the wilderness and visit the town and the city.
But as I learned from the locals or talking to them, going to a doctor or a hospital is a little bit challenge because first you have to pass 200 kilometers of mountains. It's a 4.5 hour drive if it's in a good condition. And then the next hospital is in the area. So we have to know what you're doing outside.
Yeah, absolutely.
How was it? You raised up as a kid somewhere, and what happened that you then decided to go like, I like skiing, I like to be responsible for to run such thing, getting then a managing partner? Was it a straightforward plan, or had you somewhere navigated through life with different areas, experience and stuff, and then it happened?
Well, I'm English originally, so I was brought up in central London, or born in central London, went to school just outside London. Yeah, so my parents took me skiing to the Alps during the school holidays, so that's where I got the bug for skiing. And when I left university, no, actually, maybe the next relevant point is, you know, as adults often do, they ask you what you want to be. The only thing that I could regularly come up with was, my answer was I wanted to be a fun organizer for somebody. And I had the idea, I think, to maybe work for one individual, possibly who, you know, took lots of holidays or liked to go and do fun things. And I was going to be the person that would go out and find those fun things and book the trips and be like a personal travel agent, I suppose. Yeah, then I went did university and did some work in, you know, South America, and went to university in Spain for a little bit as well. So traveled around quite a bit. And then at the end of that, again, as you're normally expected to do when you leave universities, to go and get a job. So I lined myself up for a sort of a corporate job in Europe. And one day I was thinking, I wonder whether I actually want to do this or whether I should go and do something fun for a year first. So I was like, well, what are the two things I really enjoy? One was sailing, one was skiing. So I thought I'd try the skiing thing. So I wrote pretty much all the, before the time of email or anything, I think I faxed all the ski resorts in North America looking for a job. I ended up at Tyke's Lodge heli skiing because there was a lady in there's an association for all of the heli ski and all of the cat skiing operations in British Columbia. And I sent one of the faxes, ended up in the office of this association, and that one of the ladies in there who ran that, she was English as well. And she saw my resume come through the fax, and she went and sent it to all the heli ski operations, and then Tyke's got back to me.
Cool.
So I worked, like I said, I worked for Tyke's for a winter, and then George was thinking about setting up Last Frontier, and he asked me if I wanted to invest a little bit of money in it. So that's what I did. And then fast forward to about maybe 10 years ago, George and the other senior partner, Franz Fuchs, an old-time mountain guide. Well, not old, but he's been at it for a while. He's a mountain guide, I think third-generation mountain guide from Zermatt. They were they wanted to retire, so the business was sort of gently put on the market. And there's a company in Canada here called Canadian Mountain Holidays, CMH, who basically invented heli skiing. They have 11 or 12 fantastic lodges across the province. And yeah, they came up and flew around and looked at what we had, and we showed them everything, and they put an offer on the table. And George was interested in that offer, and I sort of scratched my head, and it was a relatively slow process. I sort of scratched my head and thought about how this was going to affect me and the team and everything to be bought by the biggest guys in the industry. And it was nice because I was able to speak to lots of the guests who were coming in that winter, you know, to ski with us and tell them about the situation and maybe get a little bit of advice. Of course, we get some interesting people with a lot of experience come through. And I eventually, to cut a relatively long story short, I asked George whether if I offered him the same amount, whether he'd sell it to me. And he said yes. And I knew he was a man of his word. So that's what happened. And I put a little partnership together, which is what we have now. And it works very well, I think. I like it.
Absolutely. And if you check the internet, you are mentioned everywhere as the premium heli-ski area in Canada.
Yes. I mean, one of the nice things about this business and this sector is that everybody runs, you know, I think everybody runs a good show. I can genuinely put my hand on my heart and say that, you know, there's no operation out there that you can say is bad. So it's nice to be involved in a sector where everybody's doing a good job and everybody's trying hard and everybody has, you know, high standards and is trying to do their best, and there isn't anyone just in it to, you know, make a quick buck or to let the side down. So it's good. Yeah. And CMH, I have to...
You know, I'm organizing here as well ski trips. As I had been a ski guide in my youth, I'm looking for how professional such an operation runs, especially if you're doing on sophisticated areas like Las Fontes or Ripley Creek is a little bit more challenging terrain, how it is working, how the guides are behave, how the flight is organized. Do you go for a quick money or is safety everything? And that's what I experienced, that you cannot afford that something happens. Still, there's no 100% guarantee, but every time I see how the people are focused to make it easy for the guests, but still on a higher standard for safety. And that is a combination where I like to go and invest my money or bring people. Everything would be stupid.
Yeah. The level of expectation is reasonably high. I mean, it's not a cheap trip to go on. For most people, it's a big investment, whether it's time, money, leaving the family, leaving the business, you know, a home and coming on a trip like this. You know, one form or another, it's a big investment. So people want their return on their investment. And yeah, you have to cross your T's and you have to dot your I's. It's fun to do that. And, you know, the people that come through the doors, it's relatively common for them to scrutinize every aspect of your business. And if you're willing to listen to their feedback, you can learn a lot and make it better. You know, they're keen to get involved. You know, generally people give you feedback because they want to come back at some stage. So if you listen to what they're saying, yeah, like I said, there's lots to learn. You can implement things, you know, often relatively easily. It's just that it's the little details they're looking for.
Sometimes it's so easy if you're willing to accept it, or you can still decide what is feasible to go. Now you're telling a lot of different guests. Do you have some, not name dropping, but some, dare you say, some experience from guests where they say that had been really unique or different than the standard guests, maybe from the personality, from where they come from and what happened on the skiing tours?
Oh, look, you know, there isn't really a standard guest. It's one of the nice things. You know, you have people. Yeah, I mean, because it's easy, you can put it into financial terms. I don't want to judge people financially, but I mean, you have people where money is no object. They're very wealthy. They come and they stay with you. And then you have people who have saved up for, you know, 5-10 years to come and fulfill a lifelong dream of going heli skiing. You know, they're very passionate skiers. And, you know, the nice thing is that 98% of people from both of those extremes, you know, right, you know, from one end of the extreme to the other end of the extreme, they all have one thing in common, which is a passion for skiing. So it's sort of the interesting thing. You can put them all in the hot tub at the end of the day with a beer, and you know, you couldn't tell who's who. It can be a very grounding experience, and that, you know, that's nice. A lot of the egos get hung up at the door.
I just remember we had some British guys with us, and you know, it was -15 degrees and decided to jump in the sea.
Yeah.
And not doing it like I used to go ice bathing with slowly go in the water. They just jump from the bridge. They say, hang on, that is not really healthy. But okay, we did it. And then afterwards, going in the hot tub, it's warmer.
Yeah, yes. When we take people in the van down to the ocean to do that, I think it might be a good idea to have a defibrillator in the back there. Just makes me a little nervous sometimes. But
Yeah, as I saw the video, I said, we are all crazy, but that is okay. Lucky nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I shouldn't have mentioned it, not getting the people in trouble who supported me.
That's
no, wonderful. How is it now you run two areas, which is a difference from the style? Is there as well a difference from the guests? Go to which area?
Yeah, so we started with Bell 2. That was the first operation. But Bell 2 began to get so popular that we only really had the capacity there, or we decided we only wanted to have the capacity there for about 36 people. But we have such a huge area of terrain. It was like, well, if we don't use the rest of the terrain, then the likelihood is that someone else might come along and say, these guys aren't using this. We want to use it. So that's how Ripley Creek and Stewart started. We were able to find quite a nice little, quaint hotel in Stewart, which we were able to partner up with. So we don't own the hotel there. We just rent rooms in the winter. And then there's a little restaurant just across the road, that building we own and run. But yeah, so that started up, I think it was probably 8 years after Bell 2 started. And then the difference between the terrain is it's a little bit more committing at Ripley Creek, so a little bit more advanced. The accommodation isn't quite as fluffed and buffed as it is at Bell 2, so
it's a little bit more adventure.
It's a little bit more adventure, exactly, and tends to attract people who have, you know, maybe done some heli skiing before or been to Bell 2 and want to check out something that's a little bit more rugged.
Yeah, and I have to tell, the helicopters are smaller, so you experience more fun while flying.
Yeah, the helicopters at both operations are actually the same, but the helicopters at Last Frontier, compared with many of the operations around BC, are the smaller ones. So we ski with four guests and a guide, rather than the big ones, which will ski often with 11 or 10 guests and a guide. Yeah, that's a big difference.
And it's nice. They are very flexible.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a nice challenge. Experience, not challenge. And we had luck with the snow. Okay, the temperature, but still, if you're prepared, that's fine. No, it was the best you can have.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. It's nice when the stars align.
Sure. And the challenges or the dangerous thing is you're getting addicted to it. You like to go back and looking on my pockets, I say, no, not possible. It was already a dream in life. And the long distances, I say no, and environmental stuff, all that thing together. Okay, the lucky guys who live in US or Canada, they have a shorter distance, but easier. And I think a lot of people coming out of that area. If you're now looking on the year, as the season has just started, is there something you say, are you looking forward what is coming?
Yeah, I'd make sure in my existence on the planet that I always have lots of things to look forward to. Yeah. So no, nothing really in particular. I mean, every day is different. Like literally, you never know what's going to happen during a day. There's always something different. There's always a mixture of, you know, there's a different dynamic of people. There's always something to fix. You know, it's just nice now to have a team that you can rely on that allows me personally to not necessarily have to be doing one thing or another. Like there's someone there that can take care of more or less every aspect of the business. And it's nice to be able to go and, because I've seen almost every aspect of the business, it's nice to be able to go and participate in a variety of aspects of the business now, you know, whether it's going out skiing for the day or whether it's eating with the guests or hanging out in the kitchen with the chef or seeing what's going on in maintenance or designing a new look of the rooms or whatever it is. It's nice to be able to move around rather than be focused on one thing. I was very heavily involved in the sales side of thing, making sure that the seats were filled, and I still am, but it's just not one. It's not the same thing every day, which I consider to be a privilege.
Yeah, and I've seen you have set up a great team. You have managing guide for skiing, or two of them, and you have a managing part for the running for the lodge. And they stick together every day, looking on the guests, on the situation, and they're doing. And I think that is great. So you can orchestrate up and doing the nitty gritty fine stuff on topping of it, to make the gold out of it.
It makes, yeah, that some, yeah, like we talked about, it's a little, sometimes it's the devil is in the detail.
Yeah.
Well, you know that expression.
Mike, I have to say thank you very much to be my guest for my podcast, knowing that you started at 6 o'clock in the morning to make it possible that we have a chat and knowing that already now business is knocking on the door and waiting. So excited to have the opportunity to meet you in Ripple Creek and Stuart, and as well to have a podcast with you. I can only say thank you so much, and hopefully our paths cross again.
Thank you, Jürgen. It's been a pleasure to be talking to you this morning. And I hope our paths don't cross, but I hope our ski tracks do.
That's okay. Fair enough. That would be, as long as we can in life, running some nice ones together, I would be there.
Yeah, okay. Take care.
Take care, Mike. Thank you.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
You have heard the podcast Potentialgestalter Dialog from jürgen.ruf.consulting. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.